Our fourth case this morning is Robinson v. Devil, Incorporated.
Good morning. Rob Dasso on behalf of Robinson and the Bowersock family. This case should not be taken in a vacuum. Why we are here is that in 2001, defendants knew that their product was defective, it injured people, and that they didn't tell surgeons. 4 years later, Dr. Lynch implanted Mrs. Bowersock with the exact patch that was recalled 9 months later. Defendant's defective product caused Mrs. Bowersock's death and left four children behind, including one dependent who was profoundly autistic and mute. Defendants knowingly caused a public health disaster, severely injuring thousands of people across the country under the MDO. Let's focus on the only issue with regard to Dr. Frazoco. The only issue with regard to Dr. Frazoco under the court's summary judgment order is that his opinions were reached using an unreliable methodology. Judge McKinney, a terrific man and wonderful judge, erred and abused his discretion in excluding Dr. Frazoco when he found Dr. Frazoco's opinion was based solely upon his past patient experience. That's at page 18 of his order. In do so, Judge McKinney failed to take into consideration the totality of the evidence that was in our response to the motion for summary judgment. Dr. Frazoco's opinions were based much more significantly on at least eight other items that it is in the record. Dr. Frazoco's causation opinion was based on the personal inspection of the patch, which showed a buckle. Two, Mrs. Bowersock's extensive medical records. Three, his practical experience with medical monitoring with regard to the patch. Four, peer-reviewed medical literature supporting microperforations. Five, his review of the general medical literature related to this case. Six, the review of extensive internal corporate documents. Number seven, Bard's own medical literature review on contractures and buckling and injuries. Number eight, the expert reports of all MDL experts over the years and his extensive experience with the MDL. For the district court to simply focus on one aspect, that being only that of the patient history, was erroneous. Because that was simply in response to questions, and it confirmed his opinions. It wasn't even his reliance upon those, it was his confirmation with regard to the other at least eight factors supporting the basis of his opinions. Now, what does that mean? Dr. for Zoko ruled in and ruled out, like he does every day, like doctors across the country do every day. What does that mean? That it means it is a differential diagnosis. And under a differential diagnosis that is fully supported by this court and courts across the country as a proper, reliable methodology.
Well, that theory of his causation opinion came very late in this litigation. That was not the way he described his causation theory. He used this other term, nidus theory. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but when the physical evidence from the autopsy did not substantiate that the hernia patch in this patient's body had any of the defects that prompted the nationwide recall and did not, in fact, cause her death, he developed this other theory that was never before used, not peer review tested, not reliable, in a word, which is the standard, and that's what Judge McKinney found, that his new fangled causation theory was unreliable and therefore inadmissible. And it was not characterized as a simple, commonplace differential diagnosis.
I fully understand the question. And what the defendants came up with the term nidus theory. This is not a novel approach whatsoever. And I'll take your last part, your first part last, Your Honor. This is consistent, the mechanism of injury is consistent with the cases in the MDL, meaning that there was a hole, a microperforation, regardless of the size, that allows Enterococcus bacteria to go from the bowel to the wound, which in turn led to sepsis and death. That is not novel in any way. And the court in Smith versus Ford Motor Company, this court recognizes that when reviewing expert testimony under the Daubert factors, a lack of peer review, it rarely, if ever, be the single dispositive factor that determines the reliability of expert testimony. And where that goes to, and I'll get to the autopsy, why is that important? Because that a doctor does a differential diagnosis and says that this is somewhat different, or that because we have not seen this exact mechanism of injury like this, that doesn't mean that the doctor cannot rule in and rule out and make a determination. These are highly educated, excellent doctors. The defendants, Court of Appeal, I mean the District Court, all said these are excellent experts. And what the judge and what the doctor for Zoko did is he went through his 8 different, at least, opting in, opting out
items. Counsel, the District Court didn't say that it was unreliable solely because it wasn't peer-reviewed.
Agreed. They believed that this quote, what the court grabbed onto was the fact that defendants came up with this, quote, nidus theory. They termed it. And all he said was, it is a microperforation, so it's a small perforation. But thousands of these cases had perforations of the bowel. That is exactly the mechanism of injury with regard to this defective patch and why it was recalled. And turning to your last point, Your Honor, with regard to the autopsy, Dr. Kaur is very clear. He does a cursory review of the bowel as he looks at it going down the line. He had no idea what was going on at the time and doesn't do a microscopic look. And Dr. Frizoko explains that consistently. He says there had to be, he rules in and rules out. He takes all of these items that the defendants throw at him and he says no, and here's why.
What was the mechanism, though, that caused the microperforation? Wasn't that a problem here because there was no evidence that the patch had malfunctioned in the manner in which this problem? I mean, even for a differential diagnosis, you have to have some basis for ruling a cause in, don't you?
Correct. And both, first of all, Dr. Frizoko saw a buckle. He looked at the tissue. He looked at the patch. He saw a buckle. throughout the course of the MDL, we know that the buckles can cause sharp edges, can cause...
But there wasn't a broken ring here.
Correct.
Right?
There's no
question. And there wasn't, it wasn't where the buckle had the adhesive side or the less attractive side had impacted on the bowel.
Correct. And it is a deformation. That is a buckle, but both a break buckle and everything is a deformation of the ring that was defective. And when it is defective and when it deforms, as opposed to it attaching, simply by the deformation of the ring, is that it can rub up and cause very sharp ends on the side. I agree with you, Your Honor, but that Dr. Hyman explains this very clearly, that the deformation can cause sharp edges. And that's how Dr. Frizzoco explains the Enterococcus bacteria getting in there. And what's important about the bacteria is he rules out and explains why he rules out the enterococcal bacteria. The defendants ask him, well, did it come from her stool or improper hygiene? He says, no, that's not possible. That's not what happened. So how do we get it? And it didn't come through the skin. It had to come through her bowel. I hope I answered your question.
Well, how did he rule out that her own hygiene? How did he rule out the other possible causes, like her own hygiene? I mean, it wasn't the infection, the bacterial infection that ultimately he relies on wasn't there initially.
Right, and he explained that in his deposition, because she was on massive doses of vancomycin and other antibiotics, and it wouldn't show up, or they didn't test for it properly, but it shows up 12 days after her admission to the hospital. And it's there, and that is what the most virulent bacteria that causes sepsis, and that's what he opines of why she passed away.
Go back to ruling out why her own hygiene, and especially once she's in the hospital and she has that abscess, is not
right.
How can they rule that out?
He rules that out. First of all, is it a remote possibility? Yes, but there are remote possibilities every time a doctor.
So he doesn't really rule it out. He just concludes that's probably not it.
He concludes it is more likely than not that it did not occur this way, because it would have to come from her rectum all the way up to her stomach. He goes, that's extremely rare, very rare, I think, is what he testified, and he's never seen it. I mean, he doesn't rule it out there's not a chance, but it's like anything else. He rules it out to get to his opinions, just like all other experts. What does this go to, this differential diagnosis? The defendants can quibble and cross-examine all they want at trial. They can take down, just like Your Honor just asked me those questions. They can get them on the stand and ask all these questions. What the heck is going on? But that goes to this. The case of Gaten is directly on point. Determinations on admissibility should not supplant the adversarial process. Shaky expert testimony may be admissible, assailable by its opponents through cross-exam. That's what we're talking about here. Weight and sufficiency. The family should have their day in court. These are highly qualified experts. We have all of this history of the MDL. It is completely teed up, ready to go. But it goes to weight and sufficiency. It does not go to exclusion.
That's really not the legal standard here, though. The legal standard
Correct.
Requires a very vigorous gatekeeping function on the
Correct.
Part of the district judge to ensure reliability.
Correct. And Your Honor, that is exactly right. And that's why we're up here on an abuse of discretion with regard to the district court, because the district court focused solely on these patient experiences that Dr. Frizzoco can't go back and get 10,000 records and go through all those. That wasn't why he came up or how he came up with his reliable methodology. It was differential diagnosis. And what he did of the eight things I've explained to you is why he came up with his opinions by ruling in and ruling out that he does every day. So I fully understand that, yeah. Moving on to Dr. Hyman, he was globally excluded. He was in total was excluded. We agree with the judge that he is not allowed to give an MD type of opinion, but he is allowed to, here's the biomedical reason that they failed, which is one of the reasons he gave that it is a sharp
But
edge.
If you lose Dr. Fersacco, none of that matters, does it?
I would agree with you, Your Honor, because he gives case-specific causation. I don't disagree. If we don't have Dr. Hyman, we still have a failure to warn because of how we claim that Dr. Lynch was duped and not told of all the bad things. That's correct. So Dr. Hyman is an A through M, and Dr. Fersacco is an N through Z, and the case law is clear that they can their facts and opinions mesh. Experts use it all the time.
You're into your rebuttal time.
Okay,
now.
I will sit
okay,
down.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, James Martin for the appellees. Plaintiff's disagreements with the district court's rulings with respect to the expert's testimony, whether we're talking about any one of the experts, run aground on the standard of review. And they run aground on waiver principles as well. This court has made it clear in its opinions that arguments that aren't advanced in response to summary judgment motions are forfeited for purposes of appeal. And here, the two arguments that counsel has advanced this morning in support of the overruling of the judge's decision were not made specifically in response to the summary judgment. There was no differential diagnosis argument, and there was no argument that somehow the combination of Dr. Hyman with Dr. Fersacco would get by summary judgment. But even if we entertain those arguments, the notion that there was an abuse of discretion here in the ruling made by the district court cannot be squared with this court's precedents. The court looks at two things in a Daubert inquiry. First, did the district court apply the framework that Daubert required? He most certainly did. In his opinion, he lays out the standard this court has directed courts to apply before he gets into the expert testimony. No error there. On the decision itself, of course, he has wide latitude under this court's cases, under the Supreme Court's decision in Joyner, in performing his gatekeeping function. And what this court has asked for is for the judge to explain his reasoning on reliability, on fit, and lay out the analysis of why he or she draws the conclusion that the opinions are inadmissible. He most certainly did that as well. And it would be hard to explain half a dozen decisions from this court that we have decided if that was determined to be an abuse of discretion, even if there is disagreement with how the judge got there. Now, unpacking the testimony a little bit further here, counsel has tried to describe Dr. Fersacco's theory to start with as a well-accepted differential diagnosis methodology that comes straight out of the patch litigation. As the district court properly found, it is none of those things. It was a novel theory offered for the first time in his deposition, and the key to it, of course, was patch causation by perforation. It wasn't about ruling in or ruling out infection. It was about whether there was any substantiation at all for this mechanism of causation. And there, not only did Dr. Fersacco never use the term differential diagnosis anywhere in his deposition, but he made it clear that his causation theory was just what the judge said it was, offered for the first time in this litigation to fit what he saw. Now, What the judge did then was say, okay, I'm going to expect a little more corroboration for that since it's a first time in litigation opinion. So he looked for it. Could he find it in the record? No. Dr. Frazoco's opinion, far from being a differential diagnosis, ruled out or dismissed or adopted an opinion contrary to a host of record facts that the district court knew, and differential diagnosis is not used for that. It's not used for contradicting evidence. It's not used for eliminating evidence that's uncomfortable. So he said, okay, there's no record foundation for it. Well, I better look further. So he did look further, and he looked to the only thing that Dr. Frazoco said he relied on, and that was ubiquitous patient experience. Now, that patient experience wasn't described either. He didn't know the details of it, and he didn't supply any records to substantiate it. And in the Chapman and Brown cases, this court has made it clear that that sort of personal experience in a vacuum, even from a highly credentialed expert, is not sufficient. But let's go one step further. And the final step is, not only was it not corroborated in the record, but was it corroborated by any of the other factors that Daubert would look to? Okay, so if we're in new territory, how about some confirmation in testing? Nope, didn't exist. A study? No, didn't exist. Literature? No, didn't exist. General acceptance? Well, nobody had tried this before. He went down the list of Daubert factors, and there was no substantiation for this opinion. In those circumstances, Your Honor, it cannot be labeled an abuse of discretion to reject that opinion. If Dr. Frazoco goes, Your Honor is right, they don't have any product theories because they need a specific causation theory to substantiate any of their product liability claims, including failure to warn. Moving beyond that to Dr. Hyman, we run into exactly the same problem. The judge looked at his contracture theory, which has now been relabeled as a defect theory, and said, where is the support for it in the record or in the analysis that Daubert would expect? And it wasn't there. Dr. Hyman admitted this was a first time in litigation opinion for him, too. Okay, so let's look at it. Was it tested? No, not on Ms. Bowersock's patch, not on any ring patch at all. Was there any literature that supported this mechanism of injury? No, it didn't exist. Was there any other case that he had participated in where he saw this? No, it was the same as Dr. Frazoco. He didn't see it. Was there any objective justification for it in the rest of the buccal litigation or the patch litigation? No, that wasn't there either. So when you run through the list again of corroborating factors under Daubert, you don't get any substantiation for his opinion. And again, in those circumstances, Your Honors, there is no abuse of discretion in rejecting an opinion that's unreliable. And also, of course, his opinion doesn't fit this litigation. He admitted it was a hypothetical theory not tied to causation with respect to Ms. Bowersock. And I might add in this respect, the idea that he can support Dr. Frazoco in some fashion, hypothetically, Dr. Frazoco did not rely on Dr. Hyman's opinion for any reason in his deposition at all. So what we have is inadmissible plus inadmissible, and that is not a way to resist summary judgment. It is the time that summary judgment should be entered. Unless the court has further questions, we will submit.
Well, what was the alternative theory of the mechanism for the infection here?
Oh, actually, there was great record substantiation for that. No treater, no specialist believed that this infection had originated in the bowel or had any peritoneal capacity to it at all. What they said was it resulted from the hospitalization, skin infection through the wound, and as counsel indicated, that is the likely source of it. In fact, the notion that the bowel was involved is very rare, to say the best, according to the treaters and specialists, wrong as a matter of fact. The fecal bacteria, whatever it was, entered through the skin. It was an abscess on the abdomen, no bowel cavity aspect to it at all, and that was the explanation for the infection that they cultured and treated. Unless there's further questions, we'll submit. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dasso.
Two topics to touch on very quickly. The conclusions drawn from a differential diagnosis, those eight items that the court did not consider, is the reason for the abuse of discretion. And it was not, does not need, a differential diagnosis under the law does not need to be peer-reviewed and can't be peer-reviewed since it is case-specific on a patient, specifically what the sequelae was in this case. But with a differential diagnosis, the question is if the conclusions are based upon Daubert-supported evidence. And those eight that I discussed make the difference of why Dr. Furzocco should not be excluded. To touch on just very briefly with regard to counsel's argument, the Bailey case with regard to waiver, I believe, is directly on point. We made all of the arguments, and it is my fault that we did not use the exact term in the summary judgment motion, and that is my fault. But when we moved to correct error, we didn't add facts, opinions, not one thing other than to say to the court under the motion to correct error, the term should be used as differential diagnosis. So it was raised at the trial court's level, not first time. And the court under Bailey had the opportunity to change its mind, but did not. And that was one of our reasons for the notice of appeal.
All right, you will have to wrap up. Your time has expired.
Okay. I have nothing else. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.